Well, I heard Neil Young sing about her.
I heard old Neil put her down.
In the name of the fire. Hey!
Well, I hope Neil Young will remember.
This southern man don't need him round anyhow.
Mom, who's Neil Young?
He was a singer in the 60s, like the Archies and the Banana Splits.
Four-finger discount, dude.
Welcome to Four Finger Discount, where we are currently at the beginning of season 17. It's the podcast where we always love to go on tandem bike rides. And this week we're here to review an episode that I, you know, rather enjoyed. It is Marge's Son Poisoning. I'm Dando.
I am Guy in the back seat of the tandem bicycle and taking rather a different attitude to my man Dando because, no, I did not think much of Marge's Son Poisoning at all.
No?
Started off great, by which I mean it had a really good couch gag. And then after that, things steadily went downhill like a tandem bike with a trolley behind it with an overweight police chief.
I've always been a fan of Marge and Bart stories because, in my opinion, you always get the best version of Bart when you have Marge and Bart stories, and I always find them quite relatable. Sometimes you get Bart being a dick to Marge, but by the end of it, he comes to his senses. That when he lashes out at Marge in this episode, it was believable to the point where, because he was getting bullied, right? And when you're 10, the worst thing you want in the world is to be, you know, getting bullied at school. So you don't want to be seen as a mama's boy. You don't want to be teased and things like that because she brings up the princess cake and things like that. What was nice is that he lashed out at her, but then immediately felt bad, apologized, and said, hey, how about we do something else instead? So it was. That's why I say, when I was saying before, that you get the best version of Bart, that's what you get here. Kind of like Marge, be not proud. There's another episode called Bart the Mother. I always find it quite relatable and sweet. In saying that, I didn't like the B-plot in this. I thought it had good. It was starting well, had good, somewhat potential. I'm like, oh, this is different, whatever. But it just seemed pointless in the end because as soon as he arrived, he left. I was like, what? It just felt kind of, what was the point? And I know sometimes I guess you've got to think, we've got to get home or into the episode, but it's like, well, if it makes sense, this here, it was almost like a, the Homer Day 4, where Mo sees Homer getting beaten up, and he's like, ooh, I can monetize this. Here he sees Homer's arm, ooh, I can monetize this, except he doesn't go and face for a championship. He gets there and goes, Marge doesn't care about me, I'm going to go home again. I'm like, you just got there. This is your first fight.
Yeah, the B plot didn't seem very well thought out or even, you know, all that well conceived to begin with. You're right, it did feel very much like a rehash of The Homer They Fall, or just felt like, I imagine there's a big folder full of half-baked, half-conceived ideas that's sitting somewhere on a shelf at the Simpsons HQ. And when there's a gap in an episode, it was like, oh, we've got to fill some space, or we've got to fill some time. They almost sort of reach into it at random and pull something out, and it's like, well, yeah, this'll do, you know. I mean, and yeah, we'll find some way to resolve it by the end, you know, through magic or something like that. But yeah, I was not a fan of the Homer arm wrestling thing. How it started, how it ended, anything in it. Oh, well, maybe the bit with the Texas. Does Texas guy have a name? Do we just call him Texas guy? Texas billionaire.
Rich Texan is what he's called. Yeah.
Rich Texan. Okay, look, I didn't mind that so much. I mean, he's usually good value when he shows up. And, you know, the bit with Homer, you know, pulling his hustle by being a dork and sort of doing a bit of a frink, not unfun. But, yeah, generally speaking, not a fan of that B-plot. And, yeah, when it came to the A-plot, look, you're right. I mean, there's certainly some good mileage to be gotten out of the Marge and Bart relationship, although it tends to feel usually like the same thing over again, you know, Bart will disappoint, feel bad about it, there'll be some kind of resolution. I think it was done so much better in Marge Be Not Proud, all that kind of stuff. This time around, I don't know, it certainly had, it had substance to it. You're right. I mean, that whole scene where the three bullies are confronting Bart and, you know, it's like, oh, I don't want to be seen as a mama's boy or anything like that. Yeah, that rings very true.
Yeah. You can see yourself when you're 10 doing that without thinking. You're just like, hang on, how do I fix this? Because your whole world is school, the schoolyard, right? That is your world. And the bullies are picking on you. You've got to fix that immediately, lashing out at your mum. I could see myself when I was 10 doing that and regretting it a second later, but I could still see myself doing it, you know, in the moment.
Yeah, but the way it was executed in this episode, I don't know, it just didn't really engage me in any way. I mean, I found myself, we'll be watching these episodes and I'll be sitting all the way through it, paying attention, taking notes, all that kind of stuff. I honestly felt my attention just drifting all the time. It just was really hard for this episode to, keep its grip on my attention. Now, I don't know, maybe that's because the Oscars are on. I don't know. We're recording this on a Monday, and the Academy Awards are on. I was sort of half paying attention to that. But in all honesty, I mean, yeah, Marge's son poisoning, just, I don't know, it just really failed to grab me. I don't know. I don't want to be an absolute hater or anything like that. It just, yeah, it didn't work for me, and I don't know why. I don't want to be an absolute hater about it.
I can tell you what, it's because you're live tweeting at the same time at the Oscars that you're supposed to be watching The Simpsons.
No, I put a break on the live tweeting. And I only live tweeted like three things, and that's mainly just, yay for Ke Huy Quan. By the way, this will probably be online by the time everyone's seen the Oscars, so no spoilers there.
No. We're actually going to be doing an Oscar special for the very first episode of the new and improved Movie Guy podcast. So going forward, the Movie Guys is no longer the Movie Guys, it's the Movie Guy. And what we're going to be doing is I'm going to be there sort of just conducting the train, keeping things on track. But you guys, you listeners, are going to be sending in your questions. So you can either, we're going to be asking on Twitter, we're going to be asking in the Patreon group as well. So if you haven't followed us yet on Twitter, we've just reached 11,000 followers on Twitter. So thank you, everyone. Round of applause for jumping on board and supporting us there at Four Finger Pod. Follow us on there. And each month I'm going to be asking for some movie-related questions. And each episode now, Guy's just going to run through and smash through as many mailbag questions as he can in relation to the movie industry, movies, and TV as well, film and TV. And because, you know, Guy's, it's untapped potential there. There's so much knowledge in that brain. We've got to hack our way in there and get all that knowledge out. So,
Stay out of my brain.
Yes, film and TV questions we're going to be answering on the Movie Guy podcast every month on Patreon. But with the Marge and Bart story, getting back to the episode, I also enjoyed the way they got out of the story, because I'm watching this thinking, so Marge and Bart are becoming friends here. They're enjoying each other's company. Bart's made the mistake, they're getting back together again. But I'm like, but how are you going to get back to the status quo? Because that's what they're going to do. You've got to get back to the status quo. You can still be friendly, but they can't be best friends, because that just won't work for the dynamic going forward. I like the way that they turned on Marge, with Marge realizing, wait a minute, hang on, he's becoming, I'm making him mama's boy, I'm turning him into Skinner. I liked using the Skinner Agnes as the example of going, Marge saying, wait a minute, no, I don't want this. We can love each other, but your job is to give me things to worry about. Go out and be a boy. Kind of like when we reviewed the Sandlot kids. Like, go out and make some trouble.
That's true, and that's a good point. Look, I feel bad that I'm sort of sledging the episode the way that I am, because it's got, like, a good structure. It's got good architecture to it. You know, I mean, as you said, using the truly toxic mother-son relationship of Agnes and Seymour as an example of what not to do, or, you know, a bad mother-son relationship. Yeah, I think that's pretty smart. And, I don't know, folding it into the karaoke thing, I guess it's kind of entertaining, but...
I just like how, where Marge thought she was finally getting what she's always wanted, a son who's her best friend, and then she realised, no, don't be my best friend. Let's just be friends. You know, let's just hang out occasionally, but let's just not hang out together all the time. Don't blow off Milhouse to come hang out with me. You know, don't have tea parties and stuff like that. Let's just be friends, but not best friends. And so Marge finally sort of found a middle ground between what she's always wanted and what she actually needs and wants.
You're explaining it in a very good way, and you are sort of turning my ship around in this regard. I don't know. I thought maybe it was a tonal thing as well with this episode. Yeah. You know, when Marge was depressed, she seemed really depressed.
I didn't like the montage where she was like taking the bike to Miami and stuff. I'm like, she went to Miami? Why?
I think it's a shout out to Midnight Cowboy.
Sorry, I missed that. Okay, my apologies. Yeah.
No. I mean, Midnight Cowboy is about as old as me.
I know they did that recently on a Futurama episode. Remember the Midnight Cowboy special? Yeah. Was it the same? Was it the same song they used?
Well,
I don't think it was. Was it?
I don't think it was. No. I mean, everybody. Not everybody, but the song "Everybody's Talking" is kind of the most famous from Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah.
That usually gets used whenever you're sort of referencing that. But I think they just used some of the soundtrack.
Okay.
From Midnight Cowboy in this particular instance. And it wasn't necessarily a real big sort of obvious kind of shout out, but yeah, for nerds like me, it's like, I think that's what they're doing here, because this is when the character's sort of at their lowest. And this is when Marge is at her lowest. And it's like, I get that she's down, but yeah, this feels a little too down, you know, and I'm feeling more sad for her than perhaps I should.
It was sad to the point where it wasn't funny, because there was one line where she says, I was really looking forward to that. I was like, oh, that's just sad. That's not funny. Because she asked Homer if he'd do the bike ride with her, and then he's just like, no, I'd rather watch TV. And then she's just really sad about it. And I was like, oh. But following that, though, she wasn't really sad so much after that. She was just sort of trying to ride the bike by herself. And then she just, she realized at that point, no one wants to spend time with her. Bart would rather play a video game based on a mother-son tandem bike ride. Maggie's pretending that she's asleep. Lisa was just inconspicuously missing from that scene. And Homer would rather watch TV. So she's, no one wants to spend any time with Marge. So I can understand why she would have been sad. I did like, though, that as soon as Bart realized that she was feeling this way, he tried to fix it.
That's true. Yeah, that was good. That was good.
I think the only reason they had Homer go do the arm wrestling contest, though, was so he could come home and say, I'm coming home to you. That was the only reason. I did like them singing Sweet Home Alabama. I thought the Bart Marge singing the Sweet Home Alabama riding the bike together was quite nice.
It was pretty sweet. And, a nice appearance by Mole Man as well, who was just glad he could share in their fun.
Yeah, because the thing was, season 17, it's hard. They try and cram these sweet moments into the show, but very rarely do they come across as genuine. And I thought there was a couple of sweet moments in this episode that did come across as genuine. Like when Bart tries to tell Marge, no, I really am sorry. I really do want to spend time with you. It was just at that point in time, I just was trying to, I wasn't being honest. I was just putting on this act so the bullies would not make fun of me. Yeah, I thought that was a nice sweet moment. And then when they'll just ride the bike together, I thought it was quite sweet as well.
Yeah, it had a lot of, genuine moments in there. But I just don't think they were executed quite right. It's like, they didn't quite pull it off, but it's like, oh, I see what I honestly see what you're trying to do, and you're giving it a red hot go. But yeah, for me at least, it wasn't quite sitting.
Yeah, that's fine.
But I understand how some people would go, yourself included, Dana. I go, yeah, they nailed it. Good on them.
Oh, it's not the best episode. I'm just saying there was a lot to enjoy for me, yeah.
Hey, my favorite.
But what were your favorite moments from the episode, Mr. Davis?
Oh, God. Were there that many? Because I've actually written down here, wrote in ink, not a fan of this episode.
Well, while you try to find something for yourself, I enjoyed the bike ride, like I was saying earlier. What else? There was a moment with... Oh, I loved Homer saving them from the pinball machine, Devil's Advocate. And
oh, was it Devil's Advocate?
Yeah.
Oh. How did I not notice that? I just saw it was a pinball machine. I didn't see it was Devil's Advocate.
Too busy watching the Oscars. But yeah, when he says, well, how did this happen? We're trying to impress some girls and things just got away from us. I'm like, we've all been there. But what about you? Have you found anything?
I think, like I mentioned earlier, I think probably my favourite moment is just, Homer being a dork. I like that when he's doing his hustle.
A life partner.
But also the thing about, make sure that ginger ale is flat because the bubbles hurt my buds.
I did also enjoy when Marge says at the end, don't end up like that. And Skinner's like, what? A wall?
Like a wall?
Next question. You there, eating the paste.
All right, it's time for some trivia. But before we get into the trivia, it's time to read out the names of some of our beloved patrons who have contributed to this show, starting with our man. Of course, you all know his name. It's Elliot J. O'Neill from the Simpsons Index Podcast. If you haven't already subscribed to that show, make sure you do so. The Simpsons Index Podcast. You'll love it. Also, our man Andrew Zer for sending us $50 dues every single month. We absolutely love you, sir. As well as Heath Appleby with his $33.50. Love it. And these following people... The following people have chucked us $5 this week, so thank you so much, guys, to the following people: Jordan Moleman, Richie, Christopher Darby, Jonathan Rossi, Zach Pruitt, Timothy Burleson, George McMenemy, Stephen Roberts, Sean Devey, Pete Anderson, Andrew Davis, Ryan Dunlap, Jared Howard, Kevin Dentalplan, Flood, Joel Yoland, Katie G, Daniel Kotnick, Shannon Hofer, Reese Roberts, Bella Winderbank, Mark Boston Burgess, Jack McFadden, Preston Murray, Adric McLeod, and Lewis Kavanagh. Plus, we've got a couple of people who have just joined the family as well. Lee Ryberg, Damien Field, and Mike. Remember, guys, $5 or more will get you a shout-out on the podcast. Mr. Davis.
Welcome to our new members. Oh, yes, it's always nice to have new people hanging around the treehouse slash treehouse.
Yes, thank you for joining the family here on Patreon. Remember, guys, once we hit 1,000 supporters, we will be launching that Bob's Burgers podcast. All right, now, beginning each trivia now, we're going to be doing our brain... Was it a...
Box Office Brain Buster, I believe, was the title we decided on.
Yes, okay, the Box Office Brain Buster. All right, so this episode originally aired, Mr. Davis, November 13th, 2005. So what do you think was... at number one at the box office for the week of November 13, 2005. Before I give you any clues, you need to have a stab at it first, and then we'll give some clues.
For some reason, I want to say Revenge of the Sith, but I don't think that's it.
Nah, that's they came out in May, those films, the Star Wars films.
But it was so popular, it could have been hanging around forever. I'm going to need that first clue, Dana. Come All on, right. man. Throw me a lifeline.
Children's film.
From our friends at Pixar?
No, I don't believe so.
Ooh.
Right, here's the clue. Not Stuart.
Not Stuart. So it's not Little.
It's not Stuart.
Your clues are really esoteric, man.
Chicken Little.
Oh, Chicken. That's a terrible movie. I remember seeing that thing.
Number one at the box office. Number one at the box office. Yeah.
Kids, they're silly. They'll go see anything.
Number two, though, I'll give you a clue. If you're on a train, you wouldn't want this to happen.
Oh, well, that's Oscar winner Crash, I'm assuming.
No. That's a great movie, of course, but what's specific to trains?
I'm thinking Derailed.
Right? Derailed, correct. That is the one, yes. And third was actually Zathura, A Space Adventure.
That's not bad. Like an unofficial sequel to Jumanji.
Yeah, yes. I remember watching it once, but it was like at a party when kids were running around being crazy. It was on, but I never really properly watched it. But it's one I've always gone, I'm going to watch this one day because I know I would enjoy it because I've always been a big fan of Jumanji. But a random box office top three for the week of November 13, 2005. Chicken Little, Derailed, and Zathura, A Space Adventure.
It certainly is. I'm trying to remember who's in Derailed. I think it's Clive Owen and Jennifer Aniston. Yeah.
I'm not sure about Aniston, but it's definitely Clive Owens. Yeah, yeah. Two business people having an affair and some criminal's going to like out them or something and they're going to find a way to stop him or something like that.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And the main thing I remember from this Zathura, I think it was the first time that I saw a young actress named Kristen Stewart and I thought, that young lady's got something. She might go on to stardom, I think. And turns out she did. So well done me and well done Kristen Stewart.
All right. My first question for you is, why were they tearing down the pier?
Oh,
They set it on a sign.
They did, didn't they?
Yeah.
Oh, for rich people's condos.
Yeah, condos for rich idiots. Yep, I'll give you
condos
that
for rich idiots. Yep. That's right.
All right, what's your first one?
Who will provide you with tobacco lotion?
Tobacco lotion. Is it strong lung?
Dr. Lungstrong.
Dr. Lungstrong, yes. I did write it down, but I couldn't bother trying to find it in my notes. My next one is, what is the entry fee for the arm wrestling championships? It's the same as the prize money.
No, missed that one. $20?
$50.
$50. I got a little dyslexic with my numbers there. What is the strong man's name?
Ooh, I do have that also my name. It starts with R, doesn't it? Is it R? Is that what it begins with?
It does indeed.
It's not... Robusto.
Robusto.
It's not for sale. And my final question is, what colour bumper car does Homer take?
He's in a red one, isn't he?
A red one, yes.
He is indeed. One question for you, Dando.
Alrighty, hit me.
The Leaf Garret, unfortunately, has to close due to what in its cakes?
Rat droppings. I like that she ended her letter there with ta-ta.
Very polite. Very sweet. It looked like a nice little place to live, Garrett.
It's one thing living with an English person, certain sayings that I never would have ever heard in my life or said before. And I now find myself sort of saying it. They love saying proper. Everything's proper. This is proper coffee. But it's when they say hello, it's hi, you're right. It's not, hi, how are you going? Hi, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I'm right. Yeah, hi, you're right. You're right. Yeah, it's just a continuous loop. Hi, I'm right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I'm right. Hi, you're right. And they love saying, when you say something's nice, right? Just say, for example, oh, Elliot, you should have seen what he drew me today. They go, oh, bless.
Oh.
Oh, bless. Oh, bless him. Oh, bless.
By the way, I think we should give a shout out to our favorite Englishwoman. Apparently did very well with the running on the weekend.
Yeah, my wife Nicola, she ran for the first time 15 kilometres. She never stopped. She was training for it. But the most she ever got to running continuously was just under 13 Ks, but she pushed through. And it turns out it was actually 15.3 Ks, but they didn't tell anybody. So Nicola said she tipped over the 15 Ks. She was like, "You lied. I trusted you." She had like another 300 metres to run through, but we were waiting near the finish line, and the photographer was there, and we're sort of like clapping everyone. We're getting the kids to clap through. I was with my mum and my dad. The other contestants as I'm running past us, and that, and they appreciated the little clapping and stuff. But the photographer was there. And he's like, "Is your mum coming?" And they're like, "Yeah." And they're like, "All right, we sit there and clap." And he took a photo. It was from the Addy. So I'm assuming there's going to be a photo of Nicola in a paper somewhere this week.
Nice.
Finishing off her race with the kids cheering her on, which is nice.
Marvelous stuff. Well, running 15 Ks nonstop. I mean, God, I don't think I could do that unless there was someone with a shotgun behind me. So.
And even then. Do you love Bob's Burgers? Of course you do. Who doesn't? Well, what if I was to tell you that if you supported your pals Guy and Dando for just a dollar a month, you could help us finally launch a weekly Bob's Burgers podcast? Yes, we've set ourselves the goal of launching the new show once we hit 1,000 supporters, and we're currently sitting at 350. So, you know, there's still a way to go, but if you've enjoyed the 1,000-plus hours of content we've chucked out over the last 8 years, you can show your support by joining the Four Finger Discount family today and actually making it a reality. So go ahead, help us reach our goal and finally launch that Bob's Burgers podcast by going to patreon.com/fourfingerdiscount. You have the power inside you right now, so use it. The original air date of Marge's son poisoning was November 13th, 2005. Production code GABF20, written by Daniel Chun. Note about Daniel Chun, the writer of this episode. This was the first one he ever wrote for The Simpsons. He went on to become the head writer and executive producer of The Office.
Well done, Daniel.
Yes. Moving on to, I dare I say, bigger and better things by this point. I think, because The Office is one of the most acclaimed US sitcoms of all time. Especially the last 20 years.
Certainly of recent years. Certainly the 21st century, yeah. I mean, it's one that people just keep going back to and back to and back to. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's probably one of the things that Netflix was built on.
Yeah, it really was, yeah. Well, do you think that's probably Steve Carell's best role ever? Is that what he's getting? If he had to put something on his tombstone when it came to a role, is that what's going on there?
I reckon so. Yeah, I think that's...
Is there a bigger role than Michael Scott? He's the 40-year-old version, things like that, but I don't think it gets any bigger than that for him.
I think when the time comes and we bid farewell to Steve Carell, it'll say in his obituary, that'll be the first thing. It's like, star of The Office, Steve Carell. Yeah.
I think The Office 2 was one of those shows that seemed to be memed a lot more than others when GIFs and memes became a thing.
Yeah, absolutely, when that first started, yeah. You were seeing a lot of... A lot of Office reaction shots, yeah. I don't know if it started doing that in response to it or if it started... I mean, because you hear about movies and TV shows that are basically crafting scenes. It's like, oh, yeah, they'll meme this or they'll turn this into a GIF. Yes. So, but, yeah, I think The Office was definitely one of the first to be adopted by social media in that regard.
Now, the reason I bring up The Office once again, all ties into the great circle of Four Finger Discount's life. Our man, Pat Wright, one of our very first patrons, the first person to ever donate any money to this little crazy empire that we've been building here at the Four Finger Discount Network, Pat Wright, and his beloved wife, Katie, are launching exclusively for us here on the Four Finger Discount Network. They're going to be creating their own podcast. They've sent me the first episode yesterday on The Office. So if you are a fan of The Office, you can hear Pat Wright and his wife, Katie, discuss every episode of all time, starting with the pilot. I've got the first episode in my possession. We're going to be getting a couple more in the bag, and then we're going to be launching that one in the coming weeks as well. So look out for that. I'll promote it on all the social media pages, but there's going to be an Office podcast here on the Four Finger Discount Network, not hosted by us.
Oh, my God.
We're branching out, Mr. Davis. We're branching out.
Pat Wright staging a hostile takeover.
Yeah.
Although, is Pat Canadian? Pat is Canadian.
He is Canadian, yes.
Okay, so it'll be a polite takeover as opposed to a hostile takeover.
All right, so as I said, we're here to review Marge's Son Poisoning. It was written by Daniel Chun, directed by our man Mike B. Anderson, and The Couch Gag. Let's discuss The Couch Gag. You said at the start that you enjoyed it. It was almost like a mini horror movie, wasn't it?
It was. It felt direct out of Treehouse of Horror. It really did. I mean,
this should have been what started Treehouse of Horror 16 last week.
You'd think so. Yeah, because initially, the couch is a monster. It's eating them. Or they're running away from a couch. That's all good. Now let's get on with the episode. Da, 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 da. No, there's more. Oh, there's couches all over town that are you know, snapping people up, whether it's Sherry and Terry. Mo is being attacked by multiple couches. Other people are getting devoured. Had a nice, spooky horror movie feel to it. And, went on a little longer than I expected, but just long enough. It didn't outstay its welcome,
No, not at all. Because last week, what did outstay its welcome? When I say last week, I mean the last episode of Season 17, Treehouse of Horror 16, that Kang and Curtis watching the baseball, that just went on and on and on and on and on.
Oh, my God, yes.
And I know they have to cram Kang and Kodos into the Treehouse of Horror somehow, but you literally could have had this couch gag, just have them get eaten by their couch on their ship or something like that. Problem solved. It would have been far more enjoyable.
I think so.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, it was a good couch gag, this one. I wonder who did it. I'm not too sure. I wonder whether it was like a guest animator. It doesn't say anything on the wiki page, but anyway. So the episode kicks off with the family at Paradise Pier. And Marge says she's always wanted to ride that Ferris wheel, but it explodes because they're tearing the pier down to build condos for rich idiots. And Bart says, what are the junkies going to do? Where are they going to do their drugs? What are they going to do it under? Oh, don't worry. They're strong people. They'll find
somewhere.
They'll
bounce back.
Have you ever had a run-in with a junkie under a bridge? I've said this story on the podcast before. We did. There's a bridge that goes over. There's numerous bridges, but there's a bridge that goes over sort of like the middle part of the Las Vegas Strip. And we're about to go up and over the stairs and I remember Nicola on a honeymoon, we're about to walk up and this guy's just like, hey, mate, how much for your wife or how much for your missus for half an hour or how much for your girlfriend for half an hour? And I was like, oh, how much you got? No, I was just like, Nicola, just keep... Nicola was flattered. But I was like, Nicola, you're a junkie under the bridge. But, got to take those compliments when you can get them, I guess.
Absolutely. I don't know how committed that gentleman is to the junkie lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, he should be spending his money on drugs rather than other people's wives.
Yeah, can I borrow? Maybe he didn't actually ask money. I think he just said, can I borrow your missus for half an hour? I think he just said something like that.
Oh, okay. Hey, mate, he was committed to the junkie lifestyle because he was just catching. He wasn't going to pay. He was just like, yeah.
Free feed.
Lend us your wife. Well, yeah, I'll pay you back.
Pay you back. It always reminds me after school, the junkies coming up to you at the bus stop. Hey, mate, you got money for a pack of smokes? I'll pay you back tomorrow. I'm like, oh, well, you really, mate.
Yeah, need to get home. Have you got $2.50?
Oh, yeah, I need to get home. I need to use the phone. Remember they used to ask money for the phone? Yeah, that. As soon as payphones died out, that was fucking out of that little scheme. But they go to shop. I did really enjoy actually here when they were pulling down the various little stalls and games, how the bottles didn't fall down.
I know. I mean, a bit of a reminiscent of the South Park we recently did, where they were taken advantage of by the carnies who made the ball that the hole goes through just a tiny bit too small. And, it's – I wouldn't say it's common knowledge, but it's a bit of a common stereotype that no matter how hard you throw a ball at that stack of milk bottles, they'll never fall down. They finally reveal the horrible truth.
By the way, if you are a fan of South Park and you haven't checked out our podcast, we just uploaded our review of Chef A, one of the most notable episodes of all time of South Park. Chef Mania was running wild at that point, so I highly advise you check out our South Park podcast, Going Down to South Park. It is really fun, and quite honestly, it's catching up to Four Finger Discount. It's going pretty fucking well when it comes to people listening to that show. So, hey, I love South Park, and I've been watching the new episodes, and the last two or three episodes have been really good. Have you seen the Japanese toilet one yet? Because that was fucking hilarious.
I have not seen it yet, unfortunately. It's so funny. In the queue, so I'll ramp it up the queue a bit.
That's one thing, Trey and Matt. I know it's Trey and Matt who are in charge of this, but whoever's in charge of distributing the South Park, they do it right. They put it on TV and they make it accessible immediately worldwide. It's like, you want to watch this shit? Here it is. It's like, that's how it should be.
Yeah, no need to pirate, no need to VPN. No. Just, everybody
it's out
gets
there,
it.
Everyone's talking about it at the same time. Yeah, it's really good stuff. So, yeah, check out Going Down to South Park if you haven't already. But, yeah, so the bottles don't fall down. Homer goes to Captain Dodgem's. Oh, before that, though, the guy who approaches, so they do the jackhammer and all, I think it's like the sledgehammer or whatever on the bottles trying to get him to fall over. Then Roscoe from the steel mill factory arrives to check it out.
Oh, my gosh, is that Roscoe?
We work hard. We play hard. That was him.
There were a few shout-outs in this episode or a few callbacks. I mean, the whole life partner thing is apparently a bit of a callback as well.
Is it? To what?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to remember because I'm like...
Who said? Where did you see this? Who said it was a callback?
I saw it on the internet, which wouldn't lie to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it looked...
But then they didn't say to what it was a callback to.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. Anyway, But he goes to the Dodgem cars and he takes the red one and he connects to the tram line. I'm assuming it's a tram line. And that's how he gets driving along.
I did love wise guy or guy with a wise guy voice saying, shouldn't be a problem. Ooh.
And he bumps into the cops and they treat like the Dodgem cars. I hate this ride. There's always that one kid that just gets stuck in the corner on the Dodgems. Or there's always that one where like, the dad can't operate it properly, so like the guy's trying to fix it and he's just the dad's so embarrassed that he can't operate the fucking Dodgem. He's like hanging on with one hand and shit trying to steer
the
car.
He's just hanging on to it, giving it a shake.
Then we see all the different things getting pulled down. King Neptune's saltwater bath, which cures imbecility. Is that how you say the word imbecility? Like imbeciles, imbecility?
I'm not even sure it's imbecility as a word, but okay.
Let's go with it. Yeah, Dr. Lundstrom's tobacco station. And sulfur pops, that loud pronouncement means it's working. And magnesium vapor soak tubs. But wants one of these, Marge says no, so he goes limp, just behaving like a immature little child that kids tend to do. My daughter Holly's just learned how to do that. So she doesn't get what she wants. You're holding her hand, limp.
No way.
To the people who are watching it, it's like, look at that awful man dragging his child. It's like, she's not walking. Just try to drag it.
What do you want me to do?
So, you know, and even Marge here, they actually pointed out in this moment, he's just faking that he's lost vitality. Yes, I believe you. It's like, no, he is. And then Homer says, is Robusto for sale? He's not for sale. But he wants to sell all his stuff. So Homer buys his last dumbbell for $5. And this is where Marge sees the tandem bike. And she's very intrigued by this. And I looked at this and went, that's actually a really fun idea. I don't know if Nicola and I together would have the coordination to operate one, though. They seem like you'd have to be perfectly in sync. Like one person's slightly off and it's all game over, you know?
That's the thing. It seems very much like a test of your relationship. And if you couldn't be in sync riding a bike, then you'd probably start snapping each other. Well, no, it was your fault and whatever. I don't know. To me, a tandem bike just did not look like fun at all.
Because like that point, what was it? Would have been 20, I want to say maybe 15, 2016 maybe. I brought this story up years and years ago, probably when it happened. But we're in Adelaide and they've got like these bike ride tours where you ride like mountain bikes, right? Up through the hills and through the bush and shit. And then you end up riding through the city a bit and you come to like suburbia and then you arrive at this guy's place who sort of runs the place, right? Sort of at his house in suburbia. Nicola, fine. Fucking up these hills, down these hills, no issue. Through the city of Adelaide. No, it's kind of like just a big Geelong Adelaide, but she's, you know, she's stopping at the traffic. She's fine, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. We get to suburbia. We're sort of just riding along. Giant, wide fucking street. You know, barely a car parked on the side of the road. No one around. I just hear, crash, splash. Turn around. Nicola's laying in the gutter, off her bike, titty hanging out of her dress, just fucking laying there.
Oh, dear God.
Nicola, what happened? She's like, I don't know, I've lost control. I'm like, this is where you lost control. And think of the whole time when she's just laying there, boob hanging out. There's this guy just watering his front lawn, like his nature strip, just looking at her. Not even saying, not bringing up, just watering his grass, just looking at her.
What a creep.
I was just like, Nicola, she put her boob away. I was like, you're done? Like, he's just sort of like, he's just like standing there, fucking watering his nature strip, watching her, laying in the gutter. But yeah, I just remember always thinking, Nicola, she went through the hills, through the traffic in the city, gets to suburbia, just done.
So defeated by the suburbs of Adelaide.
Whenever I get intrigued by the idea of a tandem bike, I think of that moment and go, if she can't ride through suburbia.
If she can't handle the streets of Adelaide, maybe the streets of Geelong are out of question.
By the way, we mentioned parking on our recent review of the parking space for Talking Seinfeld. And we got a message from one of our listeners, one of our patrons, of course. I'll say his name. So if you're a fan of Seinfeld, check it out. But we'll be responding to it because it wasn't a heated message, but it was defending the idea of putting a bike lane in Geelong. It was from our man, Dan Motta, and he's an American who's never been to Geelong. He says, granted that, but he's a city planner who specializes in transportation. So he was very, he didn't agree with our opinion. And he sort of gave this big spiel and I was like, I think we need to retort to this on our Talking Seinfeld podcast. So listen out for an episode of The Keys because we were retorting to that.
Indeed. I won't go into it too much now because that's for that episode.
Yeah.
Dan, I believe I prefaced my rant by saying, these guys have got good intentions and a good idea and it'd be better if cities were all a bit more bike friendly, but at the same time, you went about it all wrong, Chief.
We can't blame you for the traffic congestion because you had good intentions.
Correct. But we'll talk. Dan, prepare for a big rebuttal.
Yeah, that's a tease for our episode of Talking Seinfeld for the Keys, the season finale of season 3.
A bicycle built for two, and I could be one of those two, homie. If I buy a bicycle built for two, will you ride with me?
Marge, I don't hate your mother. I just won't be sad when she dies. 47, 48.
I was asking for something.
Yeah, sure. Whatever you want. 95, 96, 13, 64, banana.
He was pretty much a jerk throughout this whole opening act, Homer. Just being a dick to Marge and ugh.
Whenever situations like this occur, I tend to write in my notes, oh, great, Homer's being a jerk. This time I wrote, great, Homer's being an asshole.
Do you think...
And he really was.
Do you think moments like that cause you to sort of switch off a bit when you're watching do you think it puts the bad taste in your mouth? And do you think that's what's caused you to not really see the positives of the Marge story? Because you're so... Not fixated on the Homer, but it just leaves a bad taste. Like, oh, it's one of these ones.
I think so. I wouldn't be surprised if that was actually the case. When, you know, you push the jerk angle just into the red. I'm like, really? You're going to be like this? I don't know, man. If you're not going to meet me halfway, forget about it.
So she crosses buying a tandem bike off her bucket list. She also wants to visit Holy Land and return safely, download something. We laugh at that.
Never get new hairstyle, though.
Yeah. never change hairdo and try wheat bread. This is the... speaking of wheat bread, right? When you go to Subway and you say, I want wholemeal bread, they give you wheat bread. I'm like, this motherfucker is not wheat. This is not wholemeal bread. Like, oh, this is multigrain bread. No, it's wheat bread. I'm like, there's no grains on this. Like, oh, it's the closest thing we have. I'm like, it might be the closest, but I asked for multigrain bread. You used to have multigrain bread. Like, oh, we don't have it anymore. I'm like, well, you just need to tell me that next time instead of just assuming I want your wheat bread.
I haven't been to Subway in a while. Is it still a tasty sandwich?
I haven't been. I didn't go because we had a lettuce shortage here in Australia recently, and they started putting cabbage in with the lettuce, and I was like, I'm not eating a salad sandwich with cabbage in it. No, thank you. It's just not happening. Yeah. And I haven't had... I reckon it's been 6 months. I prefer to just make my lunches now. Now that I'm working from home, I've sort of have more time to make my own lunches. I used to get Subway when I wanted a healthier option for lunch when I was working in the office. But now that I'm at home, I'm like, do my shopping on a Sunday, buy my shit for the week, and I make my salad rolls for lunch, and I'm happier. Yeah, save money.
That makes a whole bunch of sense.
Yeah. So now we're at home, and Homer's not refusing to ride the bike with Marge. He's just showing no interest at all. He'd rather watch TV. Mm. And Bart also... I mean, that's where we get the moment when Marge says... I was really looking forward to it. And I was like, oh, man, this is really not heartbreaking. Yeah. But it's just like, oh, it makes Homer look even worse, you know?
Like I said, I think that was the 1-2 punch that I'm like, this episode is copying an attitude that I don't necessarily enjoy.
Yeah, because we all see Marge as like our mother. She's our country mother, and we don't like her seeing her feel sad. So, no. But at first, you know, he'd rather play the video game, which, you know, I like the joke, the fact that he was playing tandem bike rubber gum. And Maggie pretends to be asleep. So Marge tries riding it by herself. She keeps crashing, and then she finally gets the hang of it. But Bart's in the treehouse with Nelson and Milhouse, and they point to how lonely she is. And this is where Bart sees it, and you know he wakes her up in the morning and offers to go for a bike ride. And she's like, "There's got to be a catch here." He's like, "Nope, he just wants to be a good son." And I was like, oh, "That's nice."
That was a nice turn that made me think, oh, this episode could be going somewhere. It might redeem itself. And yeah, this whole following sequence where they're, you know, riding through the streets and having a bit of fun together, yeah. It was heartwarming, one might say.
She brings up, I think, she says, you're just trying to get me to cook pizza in the morning or something, which leads to Homer calling Domino's, which isn't open yet, and having an argument with a recorded message because it's season 17, Homer. Bart and Marge are now singing Sweet Home Alabama as we come back from commercial, just driving through the streets of Springfield, taking in all the scenery and all the various things going on. I do like it when they just sort of go through Springfield, whether it be driving through or riding a bike in this example. You just see... life in Springfield just happening. A day in the life of Springfield. I like it when you see moments like this. And they end up going through a scary woods. And then they arrive at, I think, was a place called Springshire? Was that what it was called? The place they arrived at?
That sounds right. Yeah.
Let me just double check. I've got Springshire in my notes, but for some reason, it just seems to like it's going to be wrong. I'm just going to double check. Springshire Simpsons. It is. Yeah, Springshire. That's what it's called. or if you're in England, Springshire. It's Lincolnshire. Not Lincolnshire. Lincolnshire. Springshire. Springshire. I guess we should probably say Springshire, considering that it seems British, like tea punk.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of a British feel this episode. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Springshire.
Springshire. What sounds nicest? I think Springshire sounds nicer. Springshire.
They're both nice.
They're both nice, yes. But can't we
bet on both being good?
I like the idea that there's always been this nice place, but Marge's never visited because she was scared to go through the dark woods. Like there's going to be there's a reason why they have never gone here before. But they arrive, they come across the what was the place called? The Leaf Garret.
The Leaf Garret.
Yes.
A little bit of a place. You're far too young to be aware of a 70s pop star named Leif Garrett.
Mm. Yeah, this familiar was with completely him lost on. I knew this would have been something, but I'm like, Guy will explain it to me. It's lost on me.
My sisters were very big on him back in the late 70s. I was like, this guy looks like a wiener. Because I was a charming little brother.
Is it because also, too, that you think that, when I've never had, I had a younger sister, but when you had older sisters, when they started taking notice of boys, were you protective of your sisters or because they were older, you didn't have that sort of element to you?
No, I'm not protective of all my sisters. I mean, I think there was some element of me that was like, part of me wanted to defend them if they needed defense. And part of me also recognized there's not much I can do against this guy who's got maybe 2 feet on me, also has a mustache. Meanwhile, I'm talking like this. You be nice to my sister. You'll have me to deal with.
Or else. Bart needs the bathroom, though, so they go into the tea house, and Bart is enjoying all the various sweets. That's the thing about having a tea. It's not called English tea. What's it called when you go out for a smorgasbord?
It's high tea.
Yes, a high tea. That's it, yes. And I remember one time Nicola was like, we're going to a high tea. Like we're in England, and her dad organised, and I was like, high tea? I don't drink tea. God damn it. Anyway, I'm like, whatever. Yeah, we're here. Let's just do it. And we're there, and it's like, what? How many cakes would you like? And I was like, this is a high tea? It's just like endless scones. I was like, this is awesome.
I hope you took him aside and said, you got a branding problem.
Yeah.
You're calling this high tea. Why don't you call it all you can eat cakes? I get the feeling you would quadruple your audience.
Cake buffet is what it should be called. Homer then enters Moe's. He finds them all stuck under Devil's Advocate. And I can't believe he didn't realize that. You fool.
I know.
Your favorite moment.
No, don't do that. Oh, that hurts. Kef.
Hey, what's the big idea getting trapped under that thing?
Long story. We were trying to impress some girls and things kind of got away from us.
Just for the record, I regret nothing.
Homer, how'd your right arm get so strong?
Just lifting this dumbbell. 49,999. 50,000. I'm pretty happy with this baby. Now it's Lefty's turn.
Oh, no you don't. I just got an idea. Listen.
Whoa?
So Nabat goes through the fridge, and all he can see is healthy food. Now, did Marge take away all the treats out of the fridge so that Bart would want to go back to the tea house? Is that the idea you got from this?
That's a pretty savvy move. I think Marge, might have pulled a bit of a Swifty there, because either way she wins, Bart's like, oh, well, I guess I'm going to have some of these healthy snacks. Or you get on the bike and you ride to the cake place.
Yeah.
Either way, Marge is coming out a winner.
And so is Bart. At least he's getting some exercise that he wouldn't be getting otherwise.
That's true, and all that bike riding is going to negate all the sugar he's ingesting.
Well, some of it at least, anyway. But as he points out, he bails on Milhouse. I think it was a dentist appointment or something like that. And
so lazy eye.
That's right. Yeah. So you can see here that Bart is now putting Marge above his friends, which is nice, but it's not a healthy relationship all the time.
Balance, moderation.
Yeah, everything in moderation.
So moderation.
The rich Texan then arrives, and Moe and Homer are going to swindle him. And I just really enjoyed this. I love a good Homer and Moe scheme.
Give me a bottle of bourbon. I got a new liver, and I'm breaking it in.
Excuse me, Mr. Bartender, sir. May I have a sugar-free ginger ale and make it flat? The bubbles burn my buds.
God darn it, son. What the hell kind of sissy are you?
Hey, are you calling my life partner a sissy? Because $100 says he could whoop you in arm wrestling.
Texas penny it is. Yeehaw! God dang it! I've been played like a dimwit's kazoo.
Hey, yeah.
God!
Yes! Homo, we make a dynamite team, huh? With your arm and my head gunk, we're going right to the top. Whoa.
This is one Texan who don't like when he's made out to be a fool.
Well, what do you like?
I don't know, a good book? Long walk on the beach?
So, we kind of even things up here.
Not yet. I want to play some frisbee.
We see Marge and Bart, and they've arrived at the tea house, but unfortunately it's closed because they had rat droppings in the cakes because they just weren't paying attention. So Bart then sees this and he's like, this doesn't have to be the end of our little adventure. You come to my tree house. And Marge is taken aback. You're inviting me to your tree house? And I'm thinking, when that happened, I was like, you're right. Marge has never been in the tree house by invitation.
True, but I think mothers would have enough mindfulness to go, that's for the kids. Go. I mean, you'd stay out of there only in case of emergency would you go in. You know, you've got to respect some boundaries in that regard.
I was watching this shot, though, when she's sitting there with Bart. You know, we know how tall Marge is with her hair and stuff, and she's sort of sitting on her bum and nowhere near touching the roof. It gave me the idea for like a video or an editorial of some kind of the unexplained sort of layout of Bart's treehouse, the size of this thing. Yeah. Some weeks they have parties
the weird
in there.
Geography.
Yeah.
The weird geography of Springfield.
Yeah, or just Bart's treehouse in particular. Just, you know, just because sometimes there's giant parties with adults and, you know, some weeks it's barely
sometimes
enough
it's
to
big
have
enough
10
for
people.
James Caan. Sometimes it's too small for, anything else.
Yeah. But, how big is this tree exactly that this treehouse is in? But, for Marge's, not quite a fan of how dirty the place is. There's some standing water that began as a bowl of cereal, and Marge says, look, I can turn this tree house into a tea house.
Yeah.
Nice play on words there by Marge. And I actually like this. She pretends to throw out his comics. I was like, you got him. I mean, we mentioned on, what would it have been reviewed? The Trust. Where was it? Oh, it was the King of the Hill podcast we recently did, the Order of the Straight Arrow, talking about trust between a father and son. You don't want to play jokes on your kids all the time because they'll never trust you in the end. But it's okay to occasionally have a little sort of jab here like Marge's. I threw out all your comics. Why would you do that? And she's just laughing. Pulling pranks is different to sort of having a bit of a joke. You know, so this is just a nice little joke from Marge here. And then she seals them in Mylar so you can never read them again.
And I think the younger the child, the quicker you've got to let them know. Oh
yes. It's like my dad.
Can't let it linger.
We mentioned in that podcast that my dad constantly would make these jokes with me growing up to the point where I just never trust him anymore. And he sometimes makes these jokes with Elliot. And I'm like, no. I'm like, this kid is four. He takes everything literally.
he's like Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy. He's got no sense of irony.
No.
No grasp of nuance.
If you tell him that nugget he's just eating is actually dinosaur poo, he will believe you and he won't eat nuggets ever again. So please, sir.
Maybe not such a bad thing, but
but if it's the only thing he eats, need to get food, need to get protein in him somehow, Mr. Davis.
Yeah, good point.
But this is where we see Homer and Moe. They're leaving for the arm wrestling circuit. How will this affect your job at the plant? Negatively, I assume.
Negatively, I assume.
They might not even make this joke anymore.
To be honest,
do we ever even see him working at the plant anymore? I've forgotten that he even has a job.
It's been a while.
They may as well have just ended his job at the plant, just giving him some other way of making money, whether it be like a workers' comp or something. Just fuck that.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that job anymore, you know?
Yeah, this kind of felt like the instance where the air sort of came out of the tires for this, don't you have a job? Yeah, I mean, you're not even coming up with ways to sort of work around it anymore. It's just like, yeah, I don't go to work anymore.
I wonder if, there's pros and cons of this idea, but I wonder if, like, just say season 13, that just went, all right, an accident happens at the power plant and Homer gets workers' comp where he gets paid a weekly amount of money. He doesn't get it all in one lump sum. He gets it paid weekly or whatever, right? So the family can live. But then would the viewer not be able to relate to Homer because you need to have him... But he's not working anyway, though. So the idea of Homer being relatable was that he was like a middle class, he had a dead-end job, and he was relatable because so many people feel like their job's a dead-end job. It's like, you're working to pay the bills. But if you never actually see him at the plant, what's the point in having it in the first place? You might as well have just have him living a fucking workers' comp. And at least that would make sense as to why he's able to go on adventures all the time.
It makes sense, yeah. I mean, I don't know, maybe after 17 seasons, the idea of, following Homer to work again is like, that's a bit dull. Yeah, I mean, but coming up with story ideas that are work-related can't be that hard, surely. Or coming up with ways to sort of fold the side hustle into Homer's everyday life that includes his job.
That would be far too much work. Like, it's just don't have him, just have him not do that job anymore. It would just make far more sense. He's living off workers' comp, in my opinion. This would have been far easier.
I get where you're coming from. I think
a lot of people's disdain for the Homer character in these later teen seasons came as a result. Like, how was he, like, and just the writing in general, how was he able to do all these things when he's supposed to have a job? You know, because in the earlier seasons, it wasn't very often he was off doing something that would forever take him away from his job. Oh, I say that though. Now, there was a lot of side hustles, but they were side hustles. They weren't really taking him away from his job for long periods of time. I don't know. I mean, he did go to space. That's a pretty big deal. Anyway, enough talk about that. But that's another story. That's another article or video we can do in the future.
Mm.
But how should Homer's character have been handled his job? But yeah, so she leaves. Marge isn't bothered by it at all. And Homer's concerned that she didn't care. You know, because she's happy now. She's content. She's got her son. She's got a friend to hang out with. If Homer's not going to be her friend anymore, Bart's going to be her friend. And Mo says, don't worry about it. You know, he's just thinking about himself. Let's go make some money. So we're now at the mall where the bathrooms are no longer at the end of a weird hallway. Why is that? I was thinking about that today, actually. Why do you always have to go down this really weird and dingy, smelly hallway to get to the bathrooms or to the toilets?
I just think you want to keep the toilets as far away from the place of commerce as possible.
That's actually a very good answer. You want the smell to be as far away from possible. Yeah.
That is correct, yeah.
Yep, that makes perfect sense. Thank you for answering that question for me.
There you go, Dan. That's some planning advice for you, my man.
I feel there's going to be a feud here. Guy versus Dan. I'm looking forward to it. But Marge and Bart have bought a new tea set, a Krusty brand tea set from the China Syndrome. Marge has accidentally taken the salesman's pen. So while she goes in to return the pen to the salesman, Bart runs through the various Krusty teapot sayings. I like the, what's this? I'm not doing that one.
Learn from a professional, kid.
Yeah. The bullies then make fun of him.
Hey, Simpson, what are you going to do with that teapot? Gay out?
I'll answer for you. Yes.
What? I just shoplifted this bad boy. Housewares never knew what hit him.
Why didn't you steal something cool?
Because I'm going to bring it back to the store for store credit.
How are you going to get credit without a gift receipt, ass?
Well,
we've seen you hanging out with your mom, Simpson.
Word on the street is you're a mama's boy.
There is no way that Bart Simpson is a mama's boy.
Oh, Bart! Aren't they jazzy? They match the new curtains we hung in your treehouse. Here, try yours on. I got your child's large because your tummy's getting kind of bloopy from all the cakes we've been having. Somebody here likes princess cakes.
Princess cake? Bart, you just got yourself a nickname for life.
Hey, Princess Cake, want some Princess Cake?
Are you having a fight with your boyfriends?
Shut up! I don't want your stupid sweatshirt. Or your tea set.
Smashing voids my warranty. Have a good life.
Mom, I only hung out with you because I felt sorry for you.
That was weird.
But this whole moment here, as I said, I thought it was quite believable in the sense that Bart's lashing out at Marge because he's doing all he can to keep his image, because the image is everything when you're a kid. Your brand, as they talk about it in South Park recently, you can have your brand. Mm. And his brand is sort of like the bad boy of the fourth grade. And these bullies are going to ruin that if they spread the rumors about the princess cake. So he lashes out at Marge and he says he only hung out with her because he felt sorry, which is true to an extent.
It is, but you never say that to anybody.
No, you never say that, but like he didn't only hang out with her because he felt sorry. Maybe initially, but in the end, he realized he liked hanging out with Marge. That was the thing. And that's correct. Why he was doing what he is now. He was enjoying it too much, though, I guess. But the bullies then ask Marge, once he leaves, if they can be taught how to smoke. And she says no.
You think they'd know how to smoke by now?
I'm pretty sure you would assume so, yeah. So we come back and Bart is tearing down his treehouse, all the new changes that Marge made, including fixing the booger wall and things like that. I remember back at my old place of work. I won't name any names, but we had the booger bandit, we referred to them as in the office, where in the male's toilets, there was just these boogers that would appear on the wall next to it. So obviously this person would sit down and wipe their booger on the wall and the cleaner would clean it and you go out the next day and there'd be boogers on the wall again.
Oh my God.
We never found out who the booger bandit was. It was a weird one.
I have my suspicions.
Lisa is concerned. She goes to see Bart. She says, look, I'm really worried about Mum. She's just been sitting there for 2 hours petting the dog and not letting him leave, just petting him, petting him, petting him. And Marge then goes for a bike ride. We get the weird montage, but you said this was a Midnight Cowboy. So which part of this was the Midnight Cowboy reference? Just the vibe of it? Or?
Sort of closer to the end when things are going well for our two main characters in Midnight Cowboy. One of them's getting very sick. Neither of them got any money. Life in New York City is just hard, so they decide to board a bus to Miami.
Ah, okay, but there you go. So she's got the bucket of fish heads tipped on her head. She sees the billboard for hugging your mother. She uses the basket from the bike in a barrel. I'm like, why is there a fire in a barrel? What is going on here? But okay, it makes sense. They're going for that parody. Marge has said to Bart that she sold the bike to the police. They go for a ride down the hill. And Bart tries to apologize. I didn't mean it. I was just caught up in the moment. So he suggests they do the karaoke night at the school. We never had this at our school. We never had a parent-child event at school. The parents were never involved. The parents were part of the crowd, and that's it when it came to school.
Yes. Personally, I'm all for that. I think there should be a separation of church and state when it comes to that kind of deal. Yeah, I don't think your parents should be involved in your school activities. No. They should witness them. They should not be part of them.
The sort of has nothing to do with school, but I remember when we used to go to the Geelong show, my daddy's a hunter, right? Likes, shoots his guns and things, like hunts rabbits and foxes and things like that. Which I know you don't like hunting foxes, but he hunts them because they kill the lambs and things like that for the farmers. But when you go to the Geelong show, so speaking of carnivals earlier at the pier and that, one thing my dad was always the best at was the shoot the ducks, the duck game, right? But what he would do is he'd buy a set, right? Fire the gun, work out how they've tweaked it, and then do another lot and go bang, 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 and just get like perfect scores every time. So that's one thing my dad and I were always good at. I was like, all right, Dad, I want that toy. He's like, all right, son, you're going to get it, buddy. So you'd pick up one gun and go,
the hustler.
You'd be like, all right, he goes, and then the next guy would come. My dad used to always take great joy in going, shoots to the left. as the next person's getting to it, it's like, yeah, I'll work this one out. Just a bit, heads up, aim to the right. Yeah, it's sort of like that. But it's the thing though, every gun had its own thing. One shot too high, one shot too far to the left. And once my dad had worked it out, it was just like you could never miss, basically. But the games I'm talking about, right? Where the ducks just go along the back.
Yeah. The ducks.
Yes. So I know they still do it because you're firing a weapon. I'm not sure if they're still allowed to do that. But my dad, though, first time he'd miss a few, second time he just never missed. You just see the car and he's just like, shit.
What a legend.
But we're now at the arm wrestling championships. Marge still has not called Homer. Mo pretends that she has. He says, don't worry, better get your head in the game. The first match is against Lefty, the righty, left, right. He's only lost once when he had a fight against illiteracy.
Homer too has lost that battle.
Yes, and Homer then calls Marge during the fight. We pan out and we reveal that he's actually mid-fight when he's calling Marge and she's still not answering. I'm like, what is the point of this? This doesn't really make any sense. Look, this is the championship. The prize money is $50. So what? How are you going to be making money from this mode? It doesn't make any... you're not making money because you have to pay $50 to enter. And if you win, you're going to get your money back. So why are we doing this?
they're not the sharpest tools.
Your own sight gags are killing the story. But Mo says he wants to make it to the quarterfinals of the East Division Class B over 35 amateur grouping, but Homer's not interested, so he starts heading home. We're now at the drunk paralegal karaoke supplier. And Marge is choosing a song to sing as a duet with Bart. And Skinner claims Ebony and Ivory, because that's what he and Agnes always sing, or as people refer to it, Scaryoki.
Scary talented, I assume.
I'm singing a song with Bart tonight.
Capital. My mother and I have been performing together since I was in fourth grade, and it's really brought us closer.
Seymour, where were you? A brightly colored car hurt my eyes.
Don't worry, Mother. I have your eye bomb in my man purse right here.
Good boy. You can push your crib into Mommy's room tonight.
It's not a crib. It's a cot.
If it has rails, it's a crib.
She says you can push your crib into Mommy's room tonight. And I was like, that's just one step over creepy.
Yeah.
And stupid.
Guys, we get it.
Yeah.
We get it.
Well, the eye cream would have been enough. You didn't need to push the crib into Mommy's room. I was like, this is just...
It's a cot.
So we're now at the karaoke night where people get the chance to butcher their favourites. We have a Pooh getting quite overwhelmed singing Where Have All the Cowboys Gone? Is that what it's called? Where Are the Cowboys Gone?
It is, yeah. Big in the early 2000s. I think the woman who sang the Dawson's Creek theme song, I think, sang that one.
I don't want to wait for my life to be ending. There's something nostalgic about that song for me.
There is. I don't know if I started singing I Don't Want to Wait for My Life to Be Over in Cartman voice or Cartman did it on an episode of South Park, but whenever I sing, that's how I sing it.
Anything in the Cartman voice is better, though. Makes it twice as good.
It really
is. I just got here. That song was released in 96 by Paula Cole.
Well, yeah, but it is the same woman. Paula Cole.
It is the same woman, yes, yeah. But she's saying, when did Dawson's Creek? Dawson's Creek was 98, I reckon, don't you?
I think so, yeah. So, okay, very late 90s, early 2000s nostalgia.
It says here that she gained attention for her performance as a vocalist on Peter Gabriel's 1993 to 1994 Secret World Tour. She released her first album as a result.
Peter and Paula, nice.
Yes, just need Mary.
Where is my John Wayne? Where is my prairie sun? Where is my happy ending? Where have all the cowboys gone? Do 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 do.
What do you think of a Pooh singing it? It just sort of felt like absolute filler. I guess it was emphasizing how lame this night is, though, wasn't it?
I think it's like, yeah, it felt, it's like, you feel like a gag. You feel like you're meant, this feels like it's meant to be, you know, a bit, but it's not working. Mm. Why is that the case? You know, he's really sort of going for it. And, you know, the audience is like, we're not buying this up. But I don't know. Yeah. But just, it felt uncomfortable more than funny.
But Marge and Bart are all dressed up for their show. Bart's a big fan of his Tinklies, and he's referring to her as mother. So, I think he called her mother earlier in the episode as well.
He did.
Saying, calling your mum mother, it's not weird, but it's just like, it's your mum.
I only do it to take the piss.
Yeah, mother.
Out of dear Margaret mother. Mary. Hello, mother.
Hello. How are you?
Hello, mother. What have you been up to?
You're good, buddy.
Bat.
But Skinner and Agnes are here, and they start singing their Ebony and Ivory, and this is where she envisions her and Bart being in the same position in a few years from now. Mm. She says, stop the show. She says to Bart, don't call me mother. And she says, my son is no mama's boy. I don't want you to turn into that. What? A wall? And she says, you know, your job is to give me things to worry about. So he roughs up his hair, and she gives him the fire extinguisher, and he shoots people with the fire extinguisher, Skinner in the crowd and whatnot, and she laughs at him.
Saying die, die, die.
Was he? Oh, okay. Shit. Marge.
I know, right?
Marge is now at home singing Sweet Home Alabama by herself, but she has a smile on her face when she's singing it this time because she's sort of remembering, like her and Bart, they're pals now. She doesn't need Bart there to sing it. She's like, it's almost like she's content now with where they're at as a mother and son duo.
Yeah.
But Homer arrives to sing the song with her, but he arrives with the trophy. I was like, he left mid-first match. How does he have a trophy?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I know his arm was so strong that he's able to beat Lefty McWrightson or Righty McLefton or whatever the hell his name was. But yeah, he shouldn't have got a trophy out of that.
No.
And the trophy didn't really add much to anything.
No. The thing is, he talks about how he won a pie eating contest on the way home. And I'm like, why didn't you just make the trophy the pie eating contest trophy? But they go to bed. Then we get the bullies because they mentioned earlier that the bullies, they wanted to see My Sharona. So they end up seeing My Sharona on the front lawn. Homer throws the trophy at him and says that that's a pop music footnote.
Which is not true. My Sharona's a bit of a footnote. I don't think the Knack who sang My Sharona ever went much further than My Sharona. But still a bit of a classic song.
It's a classic song, but I've sort of put it in the same sort of level as, oh, Mickey, you're so fine, you're so fine, you blow my mind. Hey, Mickey, everyone knows it. Everyone enjoys it. You play it at every wedding.
That's true. But, yeah, the Knack aren't going to be put into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or anything like that. Plus, you know, watching this with the subtitles on, you realize, oh, wait a minute. My Sharona is actually a pretty creepy song.
Pretty one.
Always gives it up for the touch of the younger kind. It's like, who's singing this? Gary Glitter? What's going on?
Death down the stairs. But that is our review of Marge's son poisoning. All right. So, yeah, overall, it's not a terrible episode. I enjoyed the Marge Bart story. The Homer story didn't annoy me. It was just seemed pointless because as soon as he got there, it was over. I was like, what was the fucking point in the first place? Just to kill some time,
indeed,
I guess. But
indeed. I warmed up to it a little, mainly because of just the warmth you were giving off, Dando. You live to give, and I did a little bit of receiving this time around. So, okay, good for you.
What did we learn, Palmer?
What did you learn from this episode, Mr. Davis?
That if you smash the Krusty Band teapot, you have voided the warranty.
You have indeed. I've learnt that whenever I go to a high tea, make sure I look out for those rat droppings, just in case they weren't paying attention.
From this day forward, your name shall be...
All right, it's time for the Guy Davis New Name Championship. The current leaderboard stands at this. In first position, we have Luke McKay. Now, actually, we had a bit of controversy last week. Luke messaged me. So Ryan Dunlap was given the 2 points in the last Guy Davis New Name Championship. It was actually going to Luke McKay. Luke says, look, I don't want to be that person, but just letting you know that the person you gave 2 points to didn't actually come up with the three that you read out. So they had a similar idea, a name for the first segment, and the next two were different. I just read the first name because it was a Treehouse of Horror. The 2 points actually last week didn't go to Ryan Dunlap, unfortunately. Apologies, Ryan. They went to Luke McKay. So Luke McKay is in first position on 8 points, Nora Coker in second on 5 points, and in third position we have Garode Harrahill on 3 points.
So it was Ryan Nunlap.
just rub it in a little bit more. Extra salt.
Ooh, sorry, buddy.
All right, what were the notable mentions this week?
Couple of notable mentions before we get to the points. How I Met My Mother.
That goes to Luke McKay. So Luke McKay's notable mentions this week.
Hey, and Mom, I'd Like to Follow.
Ooh, that's our 33 Fitty Man, Heath Appleby.
Oh, Fitty. 33 Fitty. All right. 1 point goes to Dover the Top.
Ooh, he's no longer Nunlap. That's Ryan Dunlap with the 1 point this week.
Ryan, well, Dunlap.
Yep.
A nice play on the Sylvester Stallone arm wrestling movie, Over the Top. 2 points go to T-Barty.
T-Barty is by Adam Woolhouse. I believe that is Adam's first points on the leaderboard this season. So well done, Adam. You're now in the wildcard draw if you do not win this season. So Adam Woolhouse with the 2 points there. Well done.
Woolhouse in the house. And 3 points for a nice bit of wordplay. Quality, that's T-E-A, time. Quality time.
I really like that name. That's really good. That is by David Mott. Also their first points for this season. So well done. Some newbies here on the Guy Davis New Name Championship. I'm a fan of
that. Indeed. Turn down for Mott.
That's
well done.
It. So the current leaderboard stands at this now. In third position, we have a three-way tie, all on 3 points. Garode Harrahill, Turn Down for Mott, David Mott, and Ryan Nunlap on 3 points. In second position, we have Nora Coker, still on 5, and still in first position, Luke McKay on the 8 points. Remember, to be part of it, you've just got to be a part of the Patreon Facebook group to be part of the Guy Davis New Name Championship. Now, Mr. Davis, it's time for some mailbag for Marge's son poisoning.
Yeah.
It's a mail! The mail is here!
Ooh! All right, first one here comes from Turn Down for Mott. David says, what's your go-to karaoke song?
Mine is actually Ring of Fire by Johnny Cash.
Right.
Mm. I can pull off a not half bad Johnny Cash. So that's one that I like to do. Although it's almost a little too mellow. I'm trying to think of a one that's... I did Tumble and Dice by the Stones.
Okay, yeah.
And was told that it wasn't too bad. So I wasn't told to get off the stage. So I'll take that.
What do you think mine is? And I once belted this out at the Chinese place on Yarra Street here in Geelong, the karaoke place, and got a fucking standing ovation.
We've talked about this in the past. I want to say it was something by the Gunners.
No. You're thinking of the one that was Proud Mary. I did Proud Mary once and also got a standing ovation. I had fucking 40-year-old women. Okay. I was 20 at the time, 40-year-old women dancing on their tables at that one. But what do you think is my go-to? I'll just tell you. My go-to is Sweet Transvestite from Rocky Horror.
Ooh.
Fucking love that song.
Nice.
Just
you got to commit. Yeah, that's a good one.
Tim Curry you can't imagine anyone else but Tim Curry playing that role, couldn't you? And he played the role. He played the role on the stage show before the movie even came out. Like, he just was Frankenfurter.
Very much so, yeah. And I mean, now it seems like every soap star in the world, when they want to, you know, branch out and do a bit of theatre stuff, is like, we're going to play Frankenfurter. That'll be fun.
I'm quirky.
Of course, sometimes it backfires like it does with Craig McLaughlin.
So, all right, this one's from Glenn Gomez. Oh, I think this one might be for me. What do you see doing together with your kids?
I've got no kids.
Well, you've got Louise's.
That's true.
Louise's children. You can do things with them. when it comes to
things like avoid each other.
I'm just looking forward to just thinking things like playing video games with Elliot to the point where like it's actually like a challenge, you know, where like you don't have to sort of pretend to lose, because Elliot's still at that age where like he doesn't like to, like occasionally I will beat him just to keep things interesting, but you have to sort of like make an effort to lose when you're doing car racing games and things like that. I'm looking forward to sort of playing games against him where it's an actual challenge and I'm like trying to beat him. But it's the day where I realize I can't beat him anymore, that's the day you realize your life's over. Like, I think it's like the day you realize that your son can beat you up is when it's just like, oh man.
Yeah, get in the grave.
Andrew JP says, two-part question. What's your favorite Krusty tie-in product? The pregnancy test.
Yeah, Krusty pregnancy test. I thought that was Tupac question. Like, what about Tupac Shakur? I think I'm just passed on to Krusty Burger. I love that he's got his own franchise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, Krusty Burger. I'm all for it.
An actual fast food restaurant chain is pretty cool, yeah. And favorite TV show / movie / celebrity tie-in product? He likes licensed video games of movies. A lot of them are awful, but there's also a few good ones.
Well, it sort of ties into this episode in some way, because I think I've told this story in the past, but when I was about 14 years old at school, forgotten my lunch, and Mum rocked up with a very lovingly prepared lunch, you know, got a nice sandwich in there, bottle of something or a can of something, but it was in my old $6 million man lunchbox. And Mum actually, you know, found the classroom that I was in. Go, you forgot your lunch. It's in your lunchbox. $6 million man had been off the air for quite some time.
You know, he doesn't even write his own episodes.
Honest to God, it was very much just the class turned in unison, just pointing at me. Oh, man. And it was one of those kind of things where it's like, Mum.
Lunchboxes are very cool, though. I think when you're a kid, like Elliot's age maybe, the way, like your fashion statement is your school bag. Like what brand school bag have you got? Elliot's got his Lightning McQueen one and he's got his Jurassic Park one. It's like, you know, I've got the fucking coolest. Who's got the coolest bag? It's me. You don't have to tell me. I know. It's very important for Elliot too, what is on his drink bottle. Drink bottle's a big deal for Elliot at the moment. It's like, what is it? His Paw Patrol drink bottle? Is it the Jurassic Park? Because the water tastes different from each bottle, you know. Like at bedtime, it's got to be this one. Because you can't be drinking water out of the Jurassic Park drink bottle at nighttime. It just doesn't fly. It's got to be out of the Paw Patrol drink bottle. Different times of day, different taste of water. All right, a couple more. Jake McFarlane, did you have a favorite activity you enjoyed doing with your mum growing up or even today? When I was a kid, I just enjoyed going to the movies with my mum. It was just sort of, you know, my sister would stay home with my dad. We'd go see a movie. I specifically remember my mum taking me to see Space Jam. And it's just a memory. It's always just the most random, obscure memories just stick with you for some reason. And mum taking me to see Space Jam and getting my Space Jam cup. Speaking of tie-in products, I've always been a sucker for the tie-in movie-related cups at the cinema.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've still got my Space Jam one, because the Space Jam one had obviously the characters and shit on the actual cup, but it had a dome on top with a piece of cardboard in the middle with little tabs on each side that you can flick a little basketball through to each side. So it's like
a
mini basketball game. Yeah, it's really cool. But yeah, going to see the movies with my mum was always fun. What about you?
I have a similar movie-related memory with my mum. I was talking about this with her the other day because we saw like a Pink Panther double feature. You know, it's just her and I. And I just remember that my mum is not a unhumorous person. She, you know, she likes a good laugh, but I don't think I've ever seen / heard her laugh quite as much as during these Pink Panther movies where, you know, Peter Sellers is just, you know, falling over and making an absolute goose of himself. She was probably on the verge of pissing herself because she was just enjoying it that much. And it's just a very, very fond memory for me.
For me, similar to like that was, I was like raised on the Muppet Show, right? I loved the Muppet Show, the original one. And my nan used to always tape it for me. And She used to work at this place called Grosby Footwear. Do you remember Grosby's in Geelong?
Yeah, they're great, mate.
Yeah. She used to work there.
The puppy dog. Grosby's, yes. They're great, mate.
Yeah. And yes, before she used to go to work at 6 o'clock in the morning, she'd push record on Channel 10 and tape the Muppet reruns that used to air in the early 90s for me when I was a kid. I used to always watch the Muppets at Nan's place. And there was one segment, and because my whole family really, not me in particular, but my whole family, they love country music, right? And the guest star was Loretta Lynn at the time. And she was singing a song called One's on the Way, and it had the Muppet babies, like these little baby, ugly little fucking baby looking things on the Muppets, and they're singing the song with her. And I just remember every time my nan watched that, she just burst out laughing. I've never seen my nan laugh as much as what she did when she used to watch that segment. I don't know what it was about that segment, but she just loved it. So whenever now I watch that segment, I remember when Nan passed away back in 2020, the Muppet Show wasn't, it went on to Disney Plus not long after that, and I put that segment on, and it just made me smile. I'm just like, this reminds me of just Nan being happy, you know? So it's nice how you sort of have memories like that. But
that's good.
But final question here is from Ryan King. And he says, this is more of an anecdote than a question. Okay, so it's an anecdote. He says, he's 25 and he still lives at home with his parents. He and his mum always have their regular movie nights together. It started with him introducing her to the horror genre, then watching all the great cinema classics. They're currently working their way through the Last of Us series because they played the game together. Do you have any activities that you do with your mum? Okay, so it's the same kind of thing. But do you have any activities that you do now with your mother? Do you still do anything with your mum? My activity is, Mom, can you babysit the kids?
Mine is I go over and I tolerate Mum's sort of recounting Sky News talking points.
Oh, no, not Sky News.
Yeah, she's got a bit radicalized, old Margaret Mary. And like, you're not woke, are you?
Who's that fat dude that resembles the dude from The Simpsons? The one that was just far right. He's on at night time Sky News. He's like the poster boy of Sky News now.
I don't know what you're talking about. Is it Paul Murray? It's Paul Murray,
that dickhead.
I remember I met him ages ago when I was writing about TV. There was a Foxtel sort of junket. And met him and interviewed him. And he seemed like a really nice guy, which is a shame.
I think a lot of them just, they know what makes them money and they just play it up.
I think so. I really think that is the case. And that's a little bit sad that you've got to be sort of that kind of cynical and, you know, maybe you sort of believe what you're talking about, but you have to amplify it by, you know, you got to push it up to 11 just to, you know, cut through.
By the way, it was Birch Barlow, the guy from The Simpsons, the takeoff of Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
All right, that is Marge's Son Poisoning. Hope you guys enjoyed our review. The next episode we are reviewing here from season 17 will be See Homer Run, but we have some exciting exclusives coming to our Patreon in the coming weeks, and eventually you'll hear these on the free feed, but we're going to be revisiting Homer's Barbershop Quartet with one Sammy J, local comedian here in Australia. Very, one of the top comedians here in Australia. We love Sammy J. He's now on ABC Mornings and one of Guy's best friends. Guy's been on his show before, so I'm looking forward to chatting about Homer's Barbershop Quartet with Sammy J, as well as the music of The Simpsons with the man who produces the music of Bluey. Yes, Geoff Bush is going to be coming on the show to talk about how The Simpsons inspired him to produce or compose the music for Bluey and his favourite Simpsons songs, because he says that the songs in the Key of Springfield was like his Bible growing up. He worshipped that album, so if you're a fan of Bluey, make sure you look out for that. That's going to be going up exclusively on our Patreon in the next week. So if you're not a supporter of ours, make sure you do so, because if you are one of those 1,000 people who join us there on our Patreon, you'll be one of the people who helps us launch our Bob's Burgers podcast. Yes, once we hit 1,000 supporters, which should be easy considering how many people listen to this show, we will be launching our Bob's Burgers podcast. I'm very excited to make that happen as well. So yeah, so Sammy J is going to be coming up to revisit Homer's Barbershop Quartet. We've got Geoff Bush, the composer of Bluey, coming on to discuss the music of The Simpsons. We also recently had The Real Jim's YouTube Simpsons Extraordinaire discussing the Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie show. Our interview with one Jim Cummings, Disney voiceover legend, is up on our Patreon currently already. Plus we have also Warren from the Bart of Darkness Instagram page. He's going to be coming on the show as well. Plus our man Dan from Thumbs One. If you've been seeing those Simpsons merchandise, he does all various sort of like, not parodies, but sort of, say for example, he'll get Bart Simpson and draw him as Marty McFly, that kind of thing. So Thumbs One, our man from there, he's going to be joining us as well in the coming weeks. So a lot happening here at Four Finger Discount. Support the show, help us launch that Bob's Burgers podcast. If you haven't already, check out the King of the Hill podcast. Speaking of the Hill, going down to South Park, the one about Friends, Talking Seinfeld, and so much more, including Tales of Futurama, that's available exclusively right now on our Patreon, where we just reviewed Raging Bender, one of my favorite episodes of all time, where Bender becomes a pro wrestler. No, Ultimate Robot Fighter. That's what it is, yes. All right, that's enough shilling, Mr. Davis. This has been...
that's some good shilling.
This has been Marge's Son Poison. Don't forget, guys, by the way, one more final thing. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Check us 5 stars on Spotify if that's how you find the show. And please follow us on Twitter at FourFingerPod. We want to try and hit 15,000 followers now. We're currently on 11.3. Let's try and hit that 15,000 mark in the next month or so. But thank you guys once again. Hope you enjoyed the review. Next episode is See Homer Run. Mr. Davis, any final words for those amazing, supportive listeners out there?
I'm just glad you could share in the fun.
Shh.